The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 529, recorded on February 21st, 2019.
The 529th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 362nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dark.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So, we're going to start with what I've been playing. There's two games that I've been playing. I've been playing Civ 6 The Gathering Storm, and right now I'm playing Coupe, and I just eliminated India. And, you know, I'm enjoying the weather effects aren't as intrusive, although there's a slider in which you can, go up to 4 and make, you know, weather effects all the time. I haven't gotten to the point in which we have global warming and having the coasts rise. It's like 1920-something. I'm telling you, it's really fun. I'm enjoying the new diplomacy in which, rather than getting, you know, getting warmonger stuff, you have stuff like you have grievances and you have diplomatic favor. And you can use that diplomatic favor during world congresses to get what you want. So if to get the policy I want, I put in 50 diplomatic favor, and it looks like the computer's sort of conservative about it. You know, I'll get what I want. I think they'll probably patch that and make the computer perhaps a little bit more aggressive. So I'm really enjoying it. Have you been playing it, Scott?
No, I haven't. I actually went back and played some Civ 4. I guess I'm just saving my money right now. But I am looking into it, and I think it's always good to eliminate Gandhi before he gets nukes.
Well, it's not Gandhi, though. It's the other guy.
Oh, okay. That's right. I forgot. Okay. So, yeah, the weather effects do look interesting, and I've heard that they're not as RNG as they were in Civ 4, so it's a lot more stable.
Yeah.
So that's good.
They also, a lot of the leaders got tweaked to reflect the new diplomatic favor stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you can do something called an expansionist war. That is, if you do that, it's because the country is close to you and you're expanding, so you only get 25, diplomatic, 25 grievances and all that stuff.
Does this new system help you keep an AI as a friend as opposed to just eventually killing everyone because it's like an endless cycle of violence conquering
one? Well, when I went to war with India,
mm-hmm.
And I did the first, I denounced them, and then I went to war. A lot of the countries were angry at me, but not overly so, and the one person that I had an alliance with stayed with me.
Okay.
It was hard to get him to do a joint war, so I just, you know, fine, we're friends, don't worry about it, I'll deal with this.
Mm.
I always love it when you're about to take their last two cities, they start tossing up peace treaties at you, and I say,
of course.
Don't worry. Yeah. Oh, one of the things I noticed is that now, when they do a peace treaty, the cities you conquered, they'll list as ceding them to you. And that's part of the new thing in which cities still have an allegiance now. And there's a big allegiance thing, right?
Right. Loyalties.
You can flip other cities now with it. But what this means is that when they cede them, they say, They're not gonna revolt anymore. They're just gonna be your cities. We're not gonna deal with them.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I'm really enjoying it. The new graphics are great. It isn't like a leap in graphics, just tweaked enough, and it looks prettier. And
mm-hmm.
A lot of the old Civs have been tweaked as well to deal with the new mechanics. So it'll be interesting. I mean, after I do Coupe, I want to try Canada. Maybe one of the two, Eleanor of Aquitaine civs. as the Berserker. Because they showed a video of her flipping other cities just by having all this art and influence and just making people say, I would rather be with her.
Yeah, she does look like she can flip a lot of culture cities. That's one of the cities I wanted to try out and see just how many civs I can flip their culture.
I mean, all the new civs are interesting, so I'm going to try each one as I go along. I haven't done a game with Norway involved, because when you have Norway as one of the civs, the Nobel Prize becomes a thing. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see I'll just probably make it one of the non-random civs. The other game I've been playing for the past, for 4 hours yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to play it at all lately, is Crackdown 3, and it is really good. I love it. And, you know, I'm shocked at all the mediocre reviews by other people who don't seem to understand this is Crackdown. It's not any other game but Crackdown. This is basically, the first Crackdown and this Crackdown always seemed to me to be a spiritual successor to the Incredible Hulk game. You know, in which all you did was jump, leap, destroy shit, and all that stuff. I haven't gotten to the point in which I can pick up cars, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know if anyone who's ever been a fan of Crackdown has gone into Crackdown being like, where's the depth?
But here's the thing, there is depth. It's just, here's the thing, it is a true sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
There are some games that claim to be a sandbox, like Assassin's Creed. No, it isn't. That's an open world game. It's very structured and all that stuff. Crackdown just says, okay, here you are in this world. See ya.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you can go anywhere you like. It's just that if you're not big enough or strong enough, you're just going to get wasted, you know.
Right.
It's not like it leaves you alone because it does tell you some of the mechanics. But the thing is that any way you want to get the job done, just do it, you know. And, of course, Terry Crews is in it. And his character gets killed, quote unquote, at the beginning. If you've seen the opening cutscene, but death is cheap in this universe. You know, his DNA is still there, so you can play as him if you want. One of the funny things, you have propaganda towers, right? And if you flip a propaganda tower, Terry Crews just appears and starts telling the populace all this stuff, which is hilarious. It's just hilarious. I'm gonna have to get quotes at some point. It's just. The game is – it reminds me a little bit in terms of fun with Earth Defense Force.
It's definitely one of those cult classic beloved games that like people go in there looking for a very specific thing, and it delivers. And it doesn't try to do much more than that, and it doesn't really have to.
Yeah, and I got myself caught up with hunting for green orbs again. Green orbs, green orbs, green orbs. It's everything is green orbs. Actually, you find out the director's name. I don't know if you found out the director's name in number two, but his name is Goodwin. And at least he has a little bit more varied things to say to you. You know, like in the previous games, it's sort of like he kept on saying the same thing over and over. And this time he has something. And you have people giving you your dispatcher. One is the director, but the other one is a freedom fighter, and I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts late in the game you're going to have to pick between the two. Because here's the thing, spoiler warning for anybody who hasn't heard anything about Crackdown. In the first Crackdown, you find out at the end that you're actually working for an evil organization, and everything that you did was to help them. Basically, they ran the city into the ground so everybody would beg them to take over, you know, sort of a fascistic thing. And it was such an awesome reveal. You know, it was just chilling the way the director said it. In the second game, you're basically playing for the bad guys, right? In this game, I think people didn't like the second game because they felt like, well, we're playing for the bad guys, why should I care? You know, in this game, it's sort of like they're giving you – it looks like they're setting them up a choice which side you want to be with at the very end. If you want to be with the resistance or you want to be with the agency. So
that's cool.
That. Yeah. But like I said, hey, if you want a game in which you can play the Incredible Hulk, who can shoot, this is your game. Especially if you want Terry Crews. I haven't tried playing the multiplayer. What's interesting is that the game comes when you install the game. It installs Crackdown Campaign and Crackdown, Wrecking Zone, I think it's called. And Wrecking Zone, I think, is the multiplayer. And, you know, you can play co-op in the campaign as well, which I haven't tried yet. So, yeah, Crackdown 3 is, if you enjoy Crackdown, this game is just, you know, and there's a reason why they delayed it. They actually canceled it, Crackdown 3, and just started over from scratch, which is what they're doing with Metroid, Super Metroid. And that is, if it's not fun, why release it? Just say, screw it, we're trashing it, we're going to start over again from scratch. That's what they did with Crackdown, so I appreciate I was able to wait for something that was fun rather than something that was broken and janky and no one liked, like Crackdown 2.
Still plugging away at Apex Legends. They did their first release of new content for the game. They put out a new weapon for it, and it's a good one. They brought this one into the game. It's called the Havoc Rifle.
Yeah, and I'm willing to bet you people bitch about it because that's how everybody acts when either a new character or a new weapon is introduced into the game.
I haven't seen bitching yet. It's only a day old. There will probably be a little bit of A, a little bit of B. That said, I'm having fun with it. It's a high learning curve gun. It basically has a rev up before it starts firing rapid fire. But there are things you can get for it that really change it around from like where its base is. There's a turbocharger mod that gets rid of the rev up entirely, so it becomes a pretty good assault rifle. And then there's another mod called the Select Fire Receiver that takes it from a rapid fire assault weapon into a single fire beam sniper rifle.
That reminds me, in Crackdown 3, I found this one gun, which basically shoots a beam of green goo, and whoever it hits, they turn into a bomb. They just explode into, they just have a green explosion, and that's a good way to destroy cars along the way.
Yeah. But like with this, it's versatile. It really does depend on what kind of mods and what kind of attachments you pick up for the gun throughout the match. And in that way, it's a versatile gun that people are probably going to find all sorts of different ways to play with. It can be your assault weapon, or it can be your sniper rifle that can double as like a spray and pray up close. And I like that. I like that a lot, that like right off the bat, Apex Legends is introducing stuff that people are going to take and figure out how to play effectively, and it does something different from the arsenal that's already in the game that you really can't find, because it is also the game's only beam weapon, whereas every other game, there is other energy weapons, but every other weapon has a bit of like a bullet drop off. This one is just a straight line. You point, shoot, point and click interface. Whatever you shoot at, it's a beam. It'll hit it almost instantaneously. So it kind of has a little bit of an edge over certain sniper rifles.
Did you ever play Unreal Tournament, the original?
Uh-huh.
My favorite weapon in the game was playing an insta-jib mode in which everybody had insta-jib rifles. And basically, if you got hit by it, you just exploded into jibs.
I have always loved like rail guns and rail drivers and just like line guns, like straight up since the first Red Faction. And it has that feeling, and I love it. Just like the rev up on it, and then just hitting somebody at distance with it like a hammer. It's so good.
Now, let's talk about Rainbow Six Siege for a moment. They released the new Australian operators. Have you checked them out yet?
I've not had a chance to. I only have so much time in a week, and I've been kind of throwing it all at Apex.
Yeah, one is a wisecracker. The other one is a big, muscular girl. It's just a like She-Hulk.
Which is great. I really do want to jump back in and see what's going on with those characters, because they look fun.
Okay, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Bard's Tale 4 that came out. And, yeah, they recently patched it. And I've been, I played the character. You start out, like, in a tutorial, and they give you this character. And you go through escaping some paladin guards that are apparently killing all the bards and other people speaking out against their government. And you go through a sewer and you go through like a little
it's
battle.
It's not a Bardstale game if you're not going through a sewer. That's the story of almost every Bardstale game. You go through a sewer. Oh, right. His name is Tarjan. Let's go downstairs now.
her name is Melody, and once you leave the sewer, you're given a choice if you want to keep her or make your own character. And I decided to keep her, and apparently I got an achievement for that, so that was pretty cool. What's interesting is this game has save points called Luck Stones, and you can either use the save point or absorb the save point, and you get experience and you can level up, but then the save point is gone forever, and so you have to use a different save point. And it's a really interesting battle mechanics, too, because you get action points, and then you have your characters do their actions, and I think they share the action points, and you have a movement grid, so you can move.
They call it dynamic phase-based combat.
Yeah. And so it's rather interesting. I was trying to figure. It was a little bit difficult figuring out that I could actually use both characters. I thought they would kind of like automatically turn to it, but you have to select which character you want to act and move or attack or cast magic.
No.
And they each seem to have a different magic system as well.
Yeah, there are 21 classes in the game, and there are four archetypes: bard, fighter, rogue, and practitioner. I guess you can call them a magic user. But yeah, 21 classes. That's a lot.
That is huge. Yeah. Almost as much as Path of Exile.
they're actually, if you go to Game Watcher, I posted some mods for different, like, there's one called the Duelist for, which one was it for? Oh, for Pillars of Eternity, I think it was. You know, some new, there's a lot of mods out there to add new classes, which I found interesting. So.
Yeah, so Bardstale is an interesting game. Has good music, nice graphics.
They're good graphics. They look pretty, but it's not like it's going to break your computer.
No, it shouldn't break your computer. I hope not.
No, I mean, it's not like you have to get a real serious computer. It's more like, it looks like a very... Oh, damn it. Hold on one second. Okay, sorry. So it was like, if you ever play, do you ever play the original Bardstale?
I guess.
Okay, so for those who don't know, it was like Dungeon Master in which it was 3D, but turn-based. So, this doesn't look too much different from it, except for the fact, of course, you have really detailed backgrounds, and that's about it. I mean, the gameplay looks like it's pretty much the same.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit different.
It's a little more complex,
You have a grid little thing that you can move your characters around. In the original, it was just you select an action. There was no grid to move around. But so far, you have fewer characters. I think your party gets up to a maximum of four or so.
Yeah.
So it's not too many.
By the way, we should mention that this is an Exile game. And this was crowdfunded on Fig.
Yes.
Unlike the Bard's Tale reboot, the Bard's Tale reboot was strange. It was just a comedy game, which is fine. It just wasn't, the gameplay was eh. I mean, here's the thing. The game needed a lot of patches, because when it was first released, people were just complaining left and right about it. Now it's getting pretty good reviews now that it's been patched up.
Yeah.
So, anyways, let's get on to the news. Sorry. Okay. So, before we get into the news, we're breaking news that Reggie Fils-Aimé is retiring from Nintendo, and I'm thinking, thank God.
Thank God?
Thank God. I mean, he was... Have you ever dealt with a guy? Have you ever been up close? He's just... Oh, God.
No, never met him, Jonah.
I just, The guy is just very much like what his persona on the on stage, just very pit bullish and insisting that everything.
So he's like that Steve Buscemi meme where he's wearing that skater outfit and he's like, "Hello, my fellow gamers." It's like, "Yeah, you're not a gamer."
You guys just described everything I love about Reggie Fils-Aimé. But he's like, he's a completely straightforward brick.
I don't know. No,
I guess at least he's honest.
He tries to be so straightforward, but just watch him trying to talk about Wii music, and it's like, not as bad as Cammy Dunaway. Cammy Dunaway couldn't wait to run away from having to deal with video games. She did not like video games, but she had to feign interest in video games because she was working for Nintendo. Yeah. Reggie Fils-Aimé, you could picture him gaming, but he'd be the kind of game if you were playing side by side, split screen, you'd slap the back of his head a few times. A few dope slaps. Stop it.
I actually, like, there's a story I know of that was from, I think, the 2016 thing, or maybe 2015, when Nintendo did the World Championships again at E3. And the story goes that Reggie was playing Smash Bros. With a pro player. And one of the pro player was kicking his ass, of course, and pretty much says, "You're not very good at this for someone who works at Nintendo." And Reggie just straight up says, without even flinching, "I run a company for most of my day. You play video games for most of your day."
And but here's the thing. I was there when he was at the 3DS unveiling here in New York. Wow, mm-hmm. That was a long time ago. And at least he knows what he's talking about.
Absolutely.
You know, at least he knows what he's talking about when it comes to video games. But he's just there's just something about him that just makes him reminds you of your friend's smarmy father.
He's your uncle that works at Nintendo.
No, he's not related to you. He's the guy. He's your friend's father who you hate.
Yeah, but like he is that uncle that works at Nintendo. Like the actual one.
It'll be interesting to see who they replace him with, because
Yeah, they said they're replacing him with Doug Bowser,
who is a head of sales and marketing. Which I don't know. I've heard rumors that that Doug Bowser.
I find it interesting that someone who's working for Nintendo's last name is Bowser.
Yeah,
it's funny.
It has been a conversation all day. Like you can't log on to Twitter without seeing it. I mean, Doug Bowsette is a trending meme right now, and I just got to say, don't. But in any case, it's the rumor going around is that Doug Bowser has been a pushing force in the relationship between Nintendo and Microsoft. So if that's true, I do believe that Nintendo is probably in good hands. I don't know.
Here's the thing. As much as he's just a PR manager. He's not the one making decisions.
Right. But at the same time, like I was gonna say, Fils-Aimé was. I mean, he was there since 2004, and he was synonymous with the company. Like I can't think of Nintendo of America without thinking of Reggie.
You just make me feel old. 2004. I was 34 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was attending E3. For the third time. I don't remember who. I don't even know if Nintendo had a spokesperson before that. I think they just trotted out Shigeru Miyamoto or some developer out to talk about shit. Like I said, it'll be interesting because you can say whatever you want about Reggie Fils-Aimé, but he wasn't boring.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, he did good. He brought a lot of happiness to people and so many memes. And he gets to retire early.
Happiness.
So good.
He brought happiness to people?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Dude, have you seen all the memes?
I don't care about the memes. You never
a lot of people do.
Personal thing. I prefer hanging out with Michael Pachter, for Christ's sakes. Michael Pachter, he's one of those 50-year-old securities firm, but he's not far away from his frat house days. He's sort of like a frat house guy who's been sanded down at the sides. But if he's at something like Bethesda's thing, he's going to be toasted. Mm. He's going to be drunk off his ass.
Well, Reggie did a good job, I think. And he got his, so he gets to retire at a young age, and good for him.
Yeah. Oh, God, I hope he's not younger than me. That'll be really embarrassing.
Let me
see. I don't think he is. I think he's a few years older than me, but just a few.
Hold that thought. I
don't
do believe
even
it's
try. Okay, we're gonna move on to game news. This, the first game news is Paradox introduces multi-platform modding on Xbox One and PC, and this comes to us from Game Watcher. Publisher Paradox Interactive today unveiled Paradox Mods, an independent modding platform that resulted from a collaboration with Microsoft. The platform is now available on Xbox One through a free update to the Colony Simulator, Surviving Mars, and PC through its website. Dubbed as, quote-unquote, the first open modding platform that enables distribution of user-created game modifications across multiple platforms. Okay, stop. What was Bethesda trying to do then? Didn't Bethesda brag up and down, oh yeah, we got mods on Skyrim and Fallout and whatever. Paradox Mods allows mod creators to share their creations with both Xbox One and PC players, either using GOG.com or the Paradox Launcher, through a single upload. Surviving Mars is the first, and at the moment only, title to utilize Paradox Mods with its goal of easy, accessible, multi-platform modding in mind, offering 99 mods available on PC, Mac, and Xbox One. It's nice to see that they don't forget, oh, Mac exists. Support for more games, however, is scheduled to come later in 2019. That being said, the Paradox Mods website already has categories and mods for both Stellaris and Cities Skylines. By the way, I saw the Stellaris console edition in the Xbox store, and I'm going to say that's very interesting because how many turn-based 4X grand strategy games do you know that are on consoles, aside from something like maybe Romance of the Three Kingdoms, you know?
Yeah, and at the same time, like, I love Stellaris, but it's so much better with mods.
Yeah. Both titles have active modding communities, obviously. Cities Skylines already having mods on Xbox One as well. Furthermore, Stellaris Console Edition is due out in just a few days. According to the press release, Paradox Mods is the first direct pipeline modders to have to publish their works on consoles. Well, okay, what that makes me think is that there's going to be less curating. Because that's one of the things that Bethesda had to do with a lot of the mods. They had to curate the shit out of it. And it sounds like this is a lot looser. You create your mod, you post it, you know? And I guess if people want to complain about it, they can just complain. But I think it's sort of like, yeah, just fire and forget, you know?
So this will be definitely different than the Steam modding workshop then.
Yeah.
I know, so they didn't mention using Steam, so I guess it won't be...
No, they're using good old games. I mean...
Right. That's interesting.
By the way, I've been getting a lot of emails because I have a press account with Epic Games. I've been getting a lot of just today they mentioned Thimbleweed Park is now available, and here's a little public announcement. It's free for everybody until March 3rd. So if you're interested in Thimbleweed Park, go ahead and download it. You know. Which is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard rave reviews about Thimbleweed. I'm going to try it myself.
I have that on GOG as well. I played that. It was a lot of fun.
For those of you who don't know, Thimbleweed Park is basically an homage to the LucasArts games, to the LucasArts Scum games, SCUMM, which was their interface. So you have the same blockiness of, you know, late 80s, early 90s games, you know, in which you have these blocky and the mouth just goes up and down while they're talking.
Mm-hmm. Big heads, little arms and bodies, straight up Maniac Mansion style.
Yeah. Point and click, and a lot of fun, and there's a lot of fourth wall jumping, I think, but I remember talking about this, I think, when I played it.
Yeah, we did,
last year.
Yeah. I mean, I heard it's a great game, I'm going to try it out for myself, and I'm so happy I have an Epic Games. I also have a Gamersgate press account, too. I mean, if I wanted to, I could have every single Crusader Kings 2, expansion. That's a game I haven't tried and everybody raves about when it comes to grand strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, getting back to this, there's sort of a theme, because we're going to be talking about it a little bit later in the podcast, but it seems like we have the singularity now. I mean, you can just see it in the far off, you know. Everybody's is starting to connect, you know, and at some point, consoles are just going to be who's manufacturing it, you know, sort of like CDI. Remember, you had the Panasonic CDI, you had the Gold Star CDI, or they had different, you know, they had different things that are making the same console. Just who made the best console?
Yeah.
Anybody looking forward to 2020 when the Xbox One X Next comes out and the PS5 comes out?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I might be busy playing my Switch and PC games.
But you know, that's the good thing. here's what we know about both machines. All of them are going to be using the same library that the previous machine used, period, mm-hmm. end of story, you know, which is good because they just released another Xbox original game. They just released Jedi Academy on Xbox One, Xbox One Originals, the original Xbox Jedi Knight Jedi Academy.
Yeah, PlayStation has been releasing more PS2 games and PS1 games for the PS4.
Like, yeah, I got, but you have to buy them. In this, at least if you own the game, you can just play it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been teasing the idea of doing full backwards compatibility on a PS5, but I haven't seen anything concrete on it yet. And I've seen them going back, like, I've seen statements going back and forth on the matter. I hope they do it, but who knows?
Here's the thing. Third party, it's all depending on the third party, because the games that are on the backwards compatibility list have to be released, except if it's first party, but have to be released by, you know, by a third party. And one thing that they discovered, especially when Red Dead Redemption was made backwards compatible, people will buy it. A lot of people don't have their discs anymore, and they'll say, mm-hmm. let me just buy it. You know, or they do have a disc, and they just don't want to pop it in anymore.
Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work, even. Sometimes that happens.
Dirty disc error.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the days before digital, when you saw that dirty disc error, it just made you want to pull your head out of your hair out of your head. It's like, no!
Yeah.
I don't want to have to put that stupid disc cleaning thing, which is probably going to ruin the disc. You remember when you went to GameStop or whatever, coming and they said, oh, my disc is ready. They took out that thing, that grinder, and just put your disc filter in. Here, see if this works.
Little buffer, yeah. I remember that thing. It would leave little whirls all over it.
Yeah. So anyway. Really... Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. Red Dead Redemption. Yeah. Red Dead Online gets competitive fishing, gold armor gunfights, and next update from Polygon. Next week's Red Dead Online update is set to add anti-griefing measures and daily challenges to the game, but Rockstar Games has announced another slate of additions that will be coming to the February 26th patch. This includes balance changes, two new weapons, and tweaks to existing weapons, including the varmint rifle. Here are the biggest additions to the game that Rockstar announced. New free roam events, races, and showdown modes will be entering the game. The most interesting of these is Fool's Gold, a mission where players compete to wear a protective set of golden armor. Claiming the armor and surviving while wearing it grants players points. Killing the armor also awards a bounty of points to players. Competitive challenges are also getting fishing challenges. Fishing challenges will be broken up by type, and players will opt in and receive the bait, rod, and lures necessary to properly compete. Players who are participating in fishing challenges are kept safe from griefing, ensuring that players can focus on just catching fish. Whoever catches the highest weight total of fish wins. Showdown is getting three new modes: Up in Smoke, Spoils of War, and Plunder. More information on these modes will be released in the days to come. Races will also be getting a new variation: target races, where players shoot targets from horseback as they ride towards the finish line. Finally, a range of new cosmetic add-ons are coming to the game. A wide range of clothing options and all slots are on the way out, as well as new outfits. Shops in the catalog will start offering limited-time special items. There will also be a selection of new emotes that cover greetings, reactions, and taunts. Some of this content will be made available for PS4 players first. Open target races, a new jawbone knife, three options, and a selection of the new clothing will be a PS4 exclusive for a timed window, then made available to Xbox One players.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody actually cares.
No.
But let's not underestimate fishing. I mean, that's probably the most exciting part of this of all. You know, having fishing competitions in a game. Just, I tell you what, when I was playing World of Warcraft, a good chunk of the time was just sitting at a lake and trying to capture some rare fish.
It was fun fishing in World of Warcraft because you could talk to your friends at the same time.
I remember thinking that that I didn't care too much for Grand Theft Auto Online, and then years later I wrote a story about how it had reached something like 6 billion players, and I'm just like staring at that number. like, oh my god. And so, like, I haven't heard much about Red Dead Redemption Online.
I got the best Ultimate Edition, which has a lot of stuff for Red Dead Online. I just haven't had a chance to play it.
Yeah, I never hear anyone saying it's bad or good or anything, really. I just don't hear anything about it. But, like, I don't know. Is it just something I'm not seeing, or is it something that's, like, it hasn't caught on the way that Grand Theft Auto Online did?
No, it's just Fight Club, you know. You don't. Rule number one is you don't talk about Fight Club. Maybe people just don't talk about it, and they just do it, you know.
Maybe. I mean, feels like a weird thing to not see anything about it, because people most certainly talk about what they love or hate online a lot.
See, it's part of the same Rockstar social club, so it could be that people are just playing that and Grand Theft Online and not really talking about I don't hear people talking about Grand Theft Online either. I mean, here's the thing. Both games, the single player game has really overshadowed the multiplayer big time.
Mm-hmm.
But they're making a ton of money on it, so who knows? I mean, here's the thing. Maybe I was waiting for news that there would be any griefing, stuff before even trying it out, because I think I assume, yeah, there's going to be a lot of griefing in this. But yeah. I wouldn't even do the competitive fishing challenge to win. I would just do it just to fish.
For sure. Fishing in that game is super relaxing.
That's good.
It's not an action-packed adventure like it was in Final Fantasy XV, but I guess nothing can be perfect.
Here's the thing, though. I haven't replayed the campaign of Red Dead Redemption 2 yet, either. I don't know why. I think it's just that the story is more of a bummer. It's ironic that the story of Red Dead Redemption 2, in which John Marston and his wife get away and with their son, is more of a bummer than Red Dead Redemption, the first one, in which the ending is John Marston gets shot up by the cops while his wife and son get away. And I didn't mind replaying that. I just think, you know, I think Arthur's story is so depressing that it just kills it for me.
Hmm.
You know, he gets infected with tuberculosis and half the game is him coughing and dying while you play him. You know, that's why I didn't like to play Far Cry 2. Because I hated that stupid malaria interlude when everything goes yellow and it's like, oh, I got to put in the – I have to take drugs to get rid of that. You know, developers, if you want to make me happy, don't have my character sick for half the game. In BioShock, you're only sick for a little bit, for like 30 minutes before you healed yourself. You know, you broke away from the command to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we'll move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. The developer of Fury is making a co-op RPG. This is from Gamatsu via PC Gamer. Fury developer, The Game Bakers, has announced Haven, an adventure RPG playable in single-player or co-op. It is due out for the consoles and PC in 2020. Here is a brief overview of the game via The Game Bakers. We are pretty excited to share with you a first glimpse at our upcoming game, Haven. Since most of you know us from Fury, well, it's not Fury 2. Haven is an adventure RPG about everyday love, rebelling against the rules, and also food. You play as two lovers who escaped to a lost planet. The only thing that matters to them is staying together. The game will be available for PC and consoles, and you will be able to play it solo or with a special someone. I feel like I don't really know what the gameplay is. You say adventure RPG.
I saw the teaser, and they have a mixed race couple who are on a planet, and one thing I know is they run really, really fast.
You could see that they're mixed race. I could barely make their faces out.
Oh, well, there's a lot of other – well, if you go to the Steam page, you get to see close-ups of them, too. And okay. They have the JRPG visual novel way of speaking, you know, in which you have the two characters – you have the game in the background, right? But then the two characters pop up, you know, these painted characters, and they have little word balloons underneath them as they talk. You know, you've seen how they do it in visual novels and other JRPGs.
Yeah.
It looks – okay, it doesn't look like Fury. It looks like Fury had a baby with Journey.
Interesting.
And here's the thing. When you say play it solo or with a special someone, this tells me that it's intended for, you know, people who are, you know, together to play together, you know, so it's probably not going to be too difficult, just engaging enough that, you know, the other person who may not be good at video games will get into it. So maybe it's like, what was that co-op game from last year that you played, Scott, about the two prisoners getting away?
Oh, yeah, Way Out.
Yeah. It sounds like that, except there's a romance novel.
Hopefully with a good ending.
Yeah, I was gonna say, hopefully it doesn't end that way.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, at the end they just punch each other and kills the other.
Oh my god.
No, but like I said, it gives me a lot of Journey vibes. I mean, well, you played Fury, right, TJ?
I didn't.
Oh, okay. For those who don't know, Fury was a game in which all you did was fight bosses.
Oh, so like a Shadow of Colossus.
It was but it was also that it was a lot of what is it called again? Bullet hell elements to it too. So, you know, it was more like it was 3D. It was a fighting sort of like a 3D fighting game like Jump Force is, except it's just you and you have to figure out the boss. It was sort of like what's the name of that game again? That was recently by Microsoft on Xbox, and you know, the one with the teacup head. Cuphead. So it's sort of like a mix between Cuphead and Jump Force and all that stuff. And it has a really big following, Fury, which is why the game makers specifically has said this is not Fury 2. how many developers do you know tell people in the press room, say this is not a sequel to that game you like?
Because people probably demanded it so much that they had to make a statement to say this isn't that game.
Yeah.
If they're making it at all, I don't know. I typed Fury into Google and I got Haven instead. So it's like, okay, because I've never played or heard of Fury, so I didn't know what that was.
I'm surprised I've never heard of Fury, because
really?
it looks like something I would jam on.
Oh, definitely. This is definitely. I mean, if you haven't played Fury yet, this is. If there was a game that was made specifically for TJ, this is one of them.
Mm.
You know, think of something like Absolver, except not annoying.
Yeah, it definitely looks stylistic, but like in a cool way. I like all the neon colors and sort of watered down like aesthetic of it. It's cool.
You know, Haven has the same art aesthetic as Fury, which is maybe another reason why they said this is not Fury 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Haven kind of looks like it looks like the world of Dauntless, but like as a co-op RPG, which is cool. I like Dauntless. I like the art style in Dauntless, and I like the art style that they're rocking for Fury and Haven. So this was something I would explore.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Fury for a while was free on a platform. I forgot which one. But you can get it, you know, you can get it for Switch now. I mean, that's right. They recently released it for Switch, if I remember correctly. So if you want to get it on Switch, go ahead.
I'll have to check it out.
Here's the thing. The game is basically you have to figure out the patterns of the bosses that you're fighting. And the game is, if I remember correctly, is all bosses.
Hey, I've played a Dark Soul.
This is less like Dark Soul, because for one thing, Dark Soul is not a bullet hell game. Because, yeah, you have melee combat, but a good chunk of it is you having to avoid the billions of bullets being shot at you. But, yeah, I mean, look, this game won a lot of awards for, you know, artistic graphics. So.
Yeah, I can see that. It looks fun.
Yeah, so like I said, this game is basically learning patterns. And, you know, its biggest strength and its biggest weakness is the fact that you're just fighting boss after boss after boss. I mean, like I said, this is probably your jam, so I suggest you get it. I mean, if you want an excuse to get something for the Switch. I mean, they just released it for Switch last year.
Cool. I'll look it up.
And it's $20 now, so. We're going to move on to the next item. Rocket League gets cross-platform parties, and this comes to us from IGN. Cross-platform parties in Rocket League were promised last month, and the new Friends Update version 1.58 adds the feature. In January, Rocket League became the second cross-play title in the PlayStation cross-play beta program, And as of competitive season 10 kicks off, the game has begun allowing more than just matchmaking between players on different consoles. Using the auto-generated Rocket ID, players can find and search for their friends to add to parties and clubs, as well as viewing a list of 25 recent players met online. Sony finally succumbed to requests for cross-platform play after the backlash from Fortnite players, but Rocket League developer Psyonix was ready for the feature a whole year ago. So remember last week we talked about how Sony said, "Oh, we're doing cross-platform," and indie developer said, "Yeah, bullshit." He said no. So, but yeah, I mean, I have Rocket League on the Xbox One. I still haven't played it. It's just sitting there in my hard drive.
Rocket League is very amusing to play. It's very difficult to master. Like, and I say this as somebody who used to do, I used to put together tip videos for like players to learn how to do tricks in that game, and trying to capture some of the moves that pros do would eventually make me bald if I was still doing it, because there is. You know,
my strategy would be not to go for the ball, and just, you know, wait and be patient, and then take my shot when it actually comes to me without me having to go to it.
Yeah, for sure. That's something that a lot of players don't understand in that game, is that you don't necessarily want to be where the ball is at all the times. You want to be where it's going to be.
And, you know, that game makes a hell of a lot of money. You talk about Team Fortress 2 making its money with cosmetic microtransactions. Back when it was really, really big, I mean, it's still big, but I mean, back when it was massive, I just remember having to do news about, oh yeah, they're coming out with a new pack for DC characters. Now you can have the Joker's face on your car, blah, 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 blah. You know, all this stuff. Everybody loved to kit out their cars with cosmetics.
Mm-hmm. You can make some really shiny RC cars.
So, yeah, I mean, like I said, after the other one, we have this singularity happening, you know. What I would love to see is just when you play it, when you have a multiplayer game, you now just see icons next to each person's play and say, you know, at some point, you know what's going to happen. They will have console versus console matches. Like, everybody on this side is playing on Xbox One. Everybody on this side is playing on PS4. You'll have a lot of tribalism in that game, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. You could get away with that, like Xbox One, PS4, and Switch, but you could not get away with that. Well, actually, you probably could get away with that for PC in this particular case because Rocket League really isn't a mouse game.
No, it's not. Yeah, I mean, it's like a lot of driving games. Just try to play a driving game with WASD and the mouse. It doesn't work. You need an analog stick to get, you know,
So Rocket League actually has an advantage that even games like Fortnite don't when it comes to crossplay, is that it actually is a very level playing field as far as controls go.
You know, I am ticking down because I know it's going to happen at some point. Maybe it's going to be for 2020, but you know at some point Activision Blizzard is going to release World of Warcraft on console.
I mean, yeah, they almost have to at this point, yeah.
I mean, now Microsoft, you know, is fully backing the keyboard and mouse and keyboard. I mean, Sony did it a while ago, but now that Microsoft's doing it too, I can just, you know, and here's the thing, when you do that, you know, World of Warcraft isn't really, you know, it's most about combos, you know, making, not combos, but, you know, hotkeys and macros.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're able to do that on your Xbox or your PlayStation, you know, and doing that, then it'll be like, you know, and screw it. You don't even have to, you know, have separate worlds. Just have everybody, you know, in whatever shard they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that'll be interesting. And then, oh, but here's the thing. Then you'll have actual achievements instead of fake achievements.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. I mean, like, we've had games like Monster Hunter World and Final Fantasy XIV prove that it, like, can sort of be done, but nothing quite to the extent of
DC Online and, you know, and other MMOs. Final Fantasy XIV, which is still just PC, PlayStation 4, but still, it's possible. But World of Warcraft is such a win. I mean, they complain about having dipping scraps. What is it, 9 million? Only 9 million, quote-unquote, when they used to have something like 14 million?
Yeah.
But imagine, and here's the thing, imagine if they released on console vanilla World of Warcraft before a pre-Cataclysm Warcraft. I mean, people just want that anyway, you know, on PC. Can you imagine if they released that, if that was their excuse for releasing vanilla World of Warcraft? Was because they were doing a simultaneous console release for that. Can you imagine how apeshit people would go?
That would be ridiculous.
You know, with the micromanaging of characters and perks, you know, not like now in which you just have just, okay, I want this perk and that perk. No, you have to do the little, the tiny little perks that have to add up. I want my Drenae priest back. He's still there. He's still in the void right now, just suspending an animation because they save your characters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting. Scott, do you play Rocket League?
No, I haven't, but I do remember playing a similar race car game where you were doing flips and tricks in the air with the car, and I always liked that mechanic. Thought it was fun. You can activate your car that way. So it's an interesting game, yeah.
You know, that new Trials game is coming out, and it's been getting a lot of shit for microtransactions. Trials Rising, if I remember correctly. It's actually coming out in a few days, too. Jesus. You know, here's the thing right now about video games. It's like all these video games are being released. Like, oh, by the way, Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts 3 was released. What? Oh, last week. Oh, I heard nothing about it.
Well, I guess if... It's not one of those games you're particularly interested in.
Here's the thing. I'm plugged in. I know about every game that's supposed to be coming out. It's my part of my job. And mm-hmm. It's sort of – and I'm not the only one. It's sort of like people are like shocked that all these games are – oh, this was released. What? Really? It's out?
Yeah, I guess – I don't know. I don't know why they're not doing more big events.
You know, here's the thing. I think it's because – there's just – it's sort of like being on Steam, you know? Something's released on Steam. You say, oh, really? Because there's so much that's being released. It's sort of – everything's being lost in noise. Now you hear about the big, big games. And even that, I mean, Battlefield was released. I didn't hear about – I didn't know it was released until like 2 weeks later. That shouldn't be. We're talking about Battlefield here. DJ?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before. Like, there's only one Battlefield game I've ever really, really, really liked, and the rest of them are kind of eh. So,
no, what I'm saying is that that's the question for the week. What was the last game that was released that you didn't even know was being released? You know, sort of like, what, really?
Interesting.
Oh, gosh, there was one that happened recently. I'd have to think about it for a sec, though.
I love you, Daddy. I'm gonna read and write.
I'm recording.
I'll have that recorded forever. I'll have to save that. Anyways. Well, that was a nice little distraction. How about you, Scott? Was there a game that was released that you were shocked that was released?
I'm trying to remember. I think there probably was, but I'm not sure. Because usually, at least lately, I've been paying attention to the games that I generally like. So I'm not really sure. I'd have to think about it more again.
Here's some bleeding news for you. Larry Herb just posted the new mini virtual keyboard versus the exiting virtual keyboard. The new one will be rolling out to Xbox Insiders today. So it looks kind of like – it looks sterile. But I think it's because they're really trying to make it in line with, you know, people using their actual keyboards. Oh, well. Maybe that's non-news. So anyways, we do have listener feedback. Go ahead, DJ.
Okay. This one comes to us from Ralph. Hi, guys. Thanks for this episode. Even if I'm not so much into Resident Evil, it was interesting to listen to your thoughts on it. I played the last Resident Evil on PS4. It was 7? Don't know exactly. Yes, it was 7. The one that came out before Resident Evil 2 remake.
Was Resident Evil 6 on the PS4?
It was, but it came long before 7.
Yeah.
I finished Hollow Knight, Detroit Become Human, and Monster Boy in the Cursed Kingdom. I made it to 97% without any walkthroughs. Yesterday I started Kingdom Hearts 2.5 because I want to play through this until I start Kingdom Hearts 3.
You know, and of course, Ralph, just so you know, Kingdom Hearts 3 makes it really painfully that you don't need to know anything about the previous games because they basically do a soft reboot.
That's what I've heard. Is that they actually put in the legwork to get people up to speed who might not have spent hours upon hours playing those games over again. And of course a lot of Magic the Gathering Arena. What do you guys think of all these new old games coming out besides Resident Evil, like Monster Boy or all these HD remakes of this and that? Do you like it or do you like the original feeling of the old games? And do you want to play only graphical blasts in 2019, like Last of Us 2, Anthem, and such AAA titles?
Well, let's stop right there. I don't know. You know, I mean, there are some games that need it, like the first System Shock, which I backed. That desperately needs to be remastered because the original game didn't even use a keyboard and mouse. It treated the keyboard and mouse like a strange creature the graphics were Mac graphics at the time, read as not very good. There's some games, you know, I don't really need a graphical upgrade for. I mean, when I play Master of Magic, no.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's, like, some games, like the original Shining Force on Sega, I think are perfect as is. I like them. If they decided to do that game again, I would play it because they would probably do all sorts of cool new art with it. But I do enjoy the original quite a bit. I don't really think it needs to be changed. That said, there are games like I mentioned this before. I heard that somebody was doing a recreation of Fallout 2 and the Fallout 4 engine, and that genuinely intrigues me because the first Fallout games do not age well as far as their controls go. They're painful to play.
I remember someone did Ultima 5, I think, with a Myth engine.
Right. And so when you take those old games and you do them in a new style like Resident Evil 2 did with the Resident Evil 2 remake, it's awesome to go through those familiar steps, go through those familiar paces and journeys in a all new setup, so to speak.
You know, go ahead, Scott.
I like the remake they did of the Samus Returns game from the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, that was.
And now they're doing one for Link's Awakening. So these are bringing games that I didn't get to play the first time around, and now I get to play not only that game, but it's a graphical upgrade. And hopefully they put more. I mean, they put more stuff into Samus Returns, so hopefully they'll do the same for Link's Awakening. You know, so there's good reasons to remake older games if, you know, they're no longer, that platform isn't available as readily. Like, one game I wish they would remake would be Skies of Arcadia. I never got to play that on the Dreamcast or the GameCube, so if they brought that over to the Switch or whatever console, that would be cool. I would like to play that game.
Yeah, I think that was actually remade. It was in 2000, so...
Yeah.
No, it was never remade. Here's the thing, though. We've been conditioned to accept retro games because of all those retro games, those new retro games that, you know, made us acclimated. I mean, you play something like Fez, you know, it looks like an old game, even though it's not. Thimbleweed Park looks like an old Lucas Scum game, you know? It's like... And the Mega Man, was it 10 and 11? They are basically, they emulate really ancient NES graphics. So it's sort of like we've been conditioned to appreciate retro games, and therefore we don't mind if something that looks retro, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I'll let you in on a secret about me. I don't care how good a game looks as long as it makes me feel something, and generally – That's the like I've played some downright ugly looking graphical things that they told a story or had a gameplay mechanic that was able to make me look past those things. And likewise, I've played some beautiful things that were terrible.
Well, here's the thing, though. I used to play Deus Ex over and over and over again. I think I stopped playing it like around 2013, 2014 because the graphics just started getting too ugly for my taste. I mean, they were bad when it was actually released in 2000. Now it's just painful to look at now, despite having great gameplay and story and all that stuff. So yeah, you can have graphics that are so bad it just turns you off from the game, even if you loved it a long time ago. Which is why I really appreciate Grim Fandango, because that game will always look the same and it won't matter. You know, That's one of the best things about something like Crackdown. You know, it's cel-shaded graphics. What are you going to do? That's about as good as it's going to want to look. You know, the only thing you can change is how many things explode.
I mean, that said, when things are beautiful and functional at the same time, I do appreciate them. That's why I love Guilty Gear Xrd so much. It is probably one of the most beautiful fighting games of all time, and it's technically a masterpiece. So, well, best of both worlds sometimes.
Let's put it this way. Do you think Cuphead will look dated in 20 years from now?
No.
50 years from
no.
now?
No.
We've gotten to the point in which we can do graphics that are perennial, you know? It's sort of like this is what it is. It doesn't have to change. It's, you know, and people will love it decades from now because it looks like a cartoon. You know, and that's basically it.
Well, that's the look they wanted. So yeah, I guess in a way it's kind of quote unquote already dated. But you know, you go in knowing what you're expecting, what you're going to get, because you're going to get these old 1940s cartoon graphics and. That's, you know, the whole charm of the game.
Likewise, something like the Zelda The Wind Waker remake, I mean, it's not like a graphical – it doesn't look like a graphical masterpiece, but it does look adorable. It's a sword being fighting evil, and that is perfectly acceptable.
Do you remember that game? I forgot the name of it. It was done by a single developer, but it had full cel-shaded graphics that looked like it was a big animation team that did it. Something Tail.
Oh, yeah, Dust. Elysian Tail.
Right, Elysian Tail. That, you know, that's never going to age.
That was a very fun game.
Got it.
The gameplay was satisfying, beating up enemies, jumping all around the screen. You're leveling up your powers, and you had this cute little... flying fox character. It was a fun game, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it was released in 2013, and it looks the same. It looks there's nothing you can do that can, and there's other games too that aren't cel shaded. Like you can play Rayman Legends over and over and over again. That's not going to age,
right?
So actually, that'll be the question of the week. What game do you really love that you know will never age? I'll start first with Grim Fandango, even though you know it may be. Cheap 3D graphics, you know, early 3D graphics, but the way it was done, the artisticness of it was done, you really don't notice or care, you know, and it just looks like it'll be, it's not as timeless as cel-shaded where, you know, it's a cartoon, but, you know, playing it 20 years later, it still feels the same.
Owlboy was built in a way that was just like, It's all pixel art. It's all pixel art from top to bottom with some very interesting twin stick sensibilities, and the whole story is just fun. It's a fun subversion of expectations of the silent protagonist and the journey, and it's so good.
It does have nice painted background, painterly background. Anyway, I mean, it is, you know, it does look like a 16-bit game, but yeah. How about you, Scott?
I'll say Legend of Heroes. Because it was when I started playing it, it was already like a 10-year-old game or something. I think it was originally on the Vita or the PSP. So when I got it on PC, it was already an older game. But the graphics were still fine to look at, and the music was wonderful, and I enjoyed the characters. So it felt like a game that aged well.
You know, I'm about to say, Grim Fandango Remastered came out, and, you know, I looked at it and said, this does not look remastered. It looks exact. And keep in mind, I'd been playing the original over and over, so it doesn't look that remastered. By the way, I think Cuphead has to get a honorary mention from all of us, because there's no way that thing is ever going to look dated.
No, definitely not.
Especially since it's deliberately dating itself with 30s-style, rubber-limbed musical animation.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one of the things about Cuphead. It's one of those games I will never play. I just enjoy watching other people play.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's frustrating.
Well, here's the thing. I can actually see what's going on, you know, because when you watch Cuphead, there's a lot of background stuff going on and a lot of, you know, little details. But when you're playing it, there's no friggin' way that you're going to be paying attention to it because you have to stay alive.
It's the Dark Souls of Dark Souls.
Yeah, I'm, you know what? All Microsoft has to do next E3, last thing on the they just get up, very last thing they announce, and they just say Cuphead 2 coming 2020. People would just go friggin' nuts.
I can't even imagine how long it takes to animate all of that, though. It's got to be so time intensive.
I mean, they could probably reuse some of the assets, not all of it. I mean, they'd have to make different bosses, you know. But Cuphead himself. And his friend. I don't even know what his friend is named.
Mugman.
Mugman.
Mughead, yeah. And now there's a third character now, isn't there? Like
a girl?
A female one, yellow little cup?
Yeah, Chalice something or something.
Yeah.
At some point, I'm going to play Cuphead. At some point. Anyways.
Miss Chalice.
Okay.
TJ, keep on going with for your question of the week.
For your question of the week, I want a remake of Metroid, the original one on NES and Super Metroid for SNES, as well as some Game Boy games like Gargoyle's Quest or Simon's Quest.
Oh god, not Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest. Are you crazy?
I love Simon's Quest Castlevania 2. I don't care what anyone says. I've heard all the naysay. I don't care. I loved it.
You know, if you just put some good translated dialogue in that game, it would suddenly become the perfect Castlevania.
Well, at least they didn't say Battletoads. Oh, wait, that is being remade. When is that coming out? I mean, I have to check on that.
Yeah, they started at like E3 2018, but they never really gave it a date. It was just a quick teaser. Good callback, though, on Gargoyle's Quest. I love Gargoyle's Quest and Demon's Crest. That was one of my favorites.
Guess what? Newsweek actually has an article about Battletoads and a release date.
Oh, nice.
So they say it'll be sometime later this year. So it still has a projected release in 2019. So I'm guessing no information until E3.
All righty. There are some non-video games from my childhood, Commodore 64 and Amiga, that I would love to see as a remake. Apidia, Turrican, Moonstone, New Zealand Story, or Baldur's Gate. On the other side, maybe these games were good back in the days, but it would not be so good today anymore today, even with better graphics.
Well, Baldur's Gate was remade. They had the HD edition. So.
They had the enhanced edition with Beamdog. All the Baldur's Gates and Icewind Dales have been upgraded, and I'm just waiting for them to actually do a Baldur's Gate 3 at this point.
Please stay.
No, I was just saying, you know, C64, there were so many games. I mean, the game that I would love to see remade from the Commodore 64, aside from the original Railroad Tycoon, not the copies that came out since, but just a remake of the original because that's the best game ever made. You know, things like Temple of Apshai have gone, you know, people don't remember those games, the really early Commodore 64 games.
That Turrican was on the SNES. I seem to remember that.
Temple of Apshai?
No, the Turrican.
No, there's actually it's a sequel to it called Super Turrican.
Okay.
Was it on Super Nintendo?
It was on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, because every game on the Super Nintendo had to have a Super in front of it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm surprised they didn't do Super Final Fantasy 2.
All those Super Star Wars. Hey, there's a game that could be remade. The Super Star Wars games.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I don't think there's any games that were good back then that wouldn't be good today. I just don't think that's possible.
Here's the thing. It's sort of like When you listen to oldies radio, it seems like every song is a hit. But that's because now, 20 years later or 30 years or whatever, we've culled out all the crap and we just remember the good ones. So basically, there was a lot of crap on the Super Nintendo, but the only ones that survived are the good ones, you know, the only ones we care about. So it's sort of like time just weeded out the ones that are mediocre and the ones we remember are really good. And there are some that are almost great that people sort of remember, like the Super Star Wars games.
Yeah. And then there's like everything that that LJN ever made.
Oh, God. I remember man, the little that's like LJN a church logo. Word. Yeah. This is Back to the Future. Well, not really. It's actually a ported game from another thing, but we're going to call it Back to the Future.
And did you ever see the Famicom Back to the Future? Apparently was like beautiful and perfect and just like the actual game, but,
yes, but
never
it wasn't
left
made by
Japan.
LGN. See, that's the problem.
That's so bizarre. Why does Japan do this to us?
For a Japanese audience. I mean, they had – here's the thing. We were playing Excitebike, but they had a way to save their tracks in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
They got all the good peripherals.
Yeah.
Well, we got Robbie the Robot.
Well, yeah, we got the Robbie the Robot and the Power Glove.
Well, no, to be fair, we got – no, I mean the original original NES came also with a light gun, which is pretty good.
That Zapper is real good, but then they came out with the Super Nintendo Bazooka, which was not so good.
I enjoyed
it's bigger,
it.
Therefore, it's better.
Big shoulder gun, you go
They made like all of one game for it.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm gonna get Scott a Virtual Boy for his birthday. I just want to see how fast I can make him blind.
But yeah, please stay as you are and keep going with the good work. Greetings from Germany. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you.
I mean, we're not getting that much listener feedback, but at least the listener feedback we're getting from Ralph is nice and long and takes up a lot of time.
Yeah.
He gives us stuff to talk about. Here's the thing. I haven't played Magic the Gathering on computer in a long time. You know what? That's another game I would love to see remade is Tales from the Planeswalkers or Battle of the Planeswalkers. I forgot the name of it. That was an RPG that was done for the that was done by Microprose, and it was partly worked on by Sid Meier, and it was really fun. Duels of the Planeswalkers. And that's a game I could play now. It's because you get to play, you get to build your deck, you get to get since you're not playing against people, you know, you're playing against a computer, you get to have the banned cards like Mox Diamonds and you get to see why they were banned.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the characters have the some like a Millstone deck fighting against you or the Larry Niven deck, you know, it shows you why those are banned.
I will say this. There actually is a remake of the first Metroid. It exists out there. I actually only learned about this a few years ago. It's called Metroid Zero Mission. It came out for Game Boy Advance. It's basically the first Metroid redone in Super Metroid style. It's very good.
Yeah, the expansion Spells of the Ancients for Duels of the Planeswalkers include the expansion such Arabian Nights and Antiquities. Yeah, you know, they've gotta make a remake of Duels of the Planeswalkers, damn it. It's the only time I actually enjoyed playing Magic the Gathering. It's the only time I ever enjoyed playing Magic the Gathering. Then you had Battle Mage.
By all accounts, I've heard that Arena is very good and they're working very hard with the community around them to make it as great as they can.
I'm sure, but Duels of the Planeswalkers turned into a full-blown RPG. You know, and depending on where you were walking, you could have a random encounter. If you're walking in the swamp, a black deck character would probably attack you.
Nice.
You know, here's the thing. If you can find it on Abandonware, and I'm pretty sure you can find it in Abandonware, play Duels of the Planeswalkers. It is fun as hell. Anyways. Go ahead. What are you going to say?
I was just going to say I will check it out.
And also, you should check out Fury, which is not an Abandonware, and it's still available for purchase. Like I said, yeah, I, now that I think about it, yeah, Fury is definitely your shit, and I'm shocked that you haven't played it.
Mm-hmm. That's something I'm actually going to look up after I'm done with this podcast.
Yep. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments, and you can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chokes.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. Oh, by the way, just so you know, I have to do a TV show tomorrow, and I have to get up at 4 a.m. And then I'm doing a commercial on Saturday. And I'll have to probably have to wake up at 4 a.m. again. See, a lot of early wake-ups for me. Which is fine. I'm being done by van, so I usually get my sleep on the van, too. But yeah, I mean, the commercial is Emblem Health. So hopefully you recognize me.
Nice.
I'll be good. Good luck.
Money, 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 money. Mm-hmm. You know, what's it called? You get royalties on commercials, too.
Nice. Yeah.
But in my case, it's only going to be for a year. So heavy. Anyways, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
happy gaming, everyone.
Okay. Sorry.
Have fun, be cool, but
we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.